Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today and spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin's many lakes and streams and woodlands are in danger from both plant and animal invaders, and our two guests are on the front line of efforts to control them. Gene Scherer is an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist. She's with the statewide Purple Loosestrife Biocontrol. She's the coordinator of it with UW-Madison. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. Maddie Johansson with us as well. She's the Wisconsin DNR's statewide aquatic plant management coordinator. And Maddie, good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, these two experts are going to talk with us about their programs, give us some updates on the preventive work they're doing, and certainly looking forward to questions and comments from you as we move along today. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org, or phone 800-642-1234. Jeannie Scherer and Maddie Johansson are guests today. Jeannie, you have a very long title.
I know, it's crazy.
Oh, my goodness me. Explain what you do. I should go back and say you're an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with the statewide Purple Loosestrife Biocontrol coordinator. You're with the Division of Extension Natural Resources Institute, contracted by the Wisconsin DNR.
Yeah, I know, it's quite a mouthful, but it's like, well, it was a little shorter before Extension got absorbed by UW-Madison, but now we got to throw that in there, and which is not a bad thing at all. I don't mean that, but yeah, so I kind of have two different key parts of my job. One is to be the statewide Purple Loosestrife Biocontrol Coordinator. That position a lot of people, and I bet you've even talked to him. Brock Woods started that program over 25 years ago now. So he and I went through the transition so he could retire, which he did just the end of April. And then the AIS outreach, Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach, I help people with everything like getting signs and literature and the big program we got going on now coming up where we would normally be giving away ice packs or boat towels. I coordinate all of that and just generally help both the general public and then most strongly our aquatic invasive species partnership folks who handle a lot of the boots on the ground stuff with volunteers and the public also.
Yeah. Maddie Johansson, you're the Wisconsin DNR statewide aquatic plant management coordinator. Talk about your role.
Sure. So I'm a part of a much broader team. For those who don't know, the Aquatic Plant Management Program regulates the management and control of aquatic plants in lakes, ponds, and wetlands. APM has been an evolving practice over, you know, the last 50, 60 years, and we've got quite a big team at the DNR to help us out with that. So I coordinate at the statewide level, and then each region has a designated lakes biologist and occasionally a separate APM coordinator to work with permittees. So they conduct pre and post treatment surveys, they issue permits, they discuss those permit decisions with stakeholders, they go to lake district meetings, they do a whole lot of work with APM, and my role is really just to sort of coordinate those efforts from a statewide level.
Joe in Montello has a question for you, I believe. Joe, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question about gobies in Great Lakes. It was, I don't know, was it 20 years ago when they came in and they were eating all the game fish eggs and were going to take over, but it doesn't seem to have happened. What happened to them?
Hmm. Oh, they're still there. I've been down on the shoreline of Lake Michigan when people are fishing from shore and they're throwing them up on the side to let the seagulls come and grab them. One of the reasons that things slow down in the news is they just aren't making news. They're there. We're dealing with them as best we can. It was big news a couple years ago because they actually had to close a lock up by Lake Winnebago because one had been found. I don't remember specifically where, but that lock was key. By closing it, they could make sure no more got through there. And extensive work was done to monitor, and they're still monitoring, and to do that monitoring through the whole, you know, up river and in close by lakes. And they did these really cool dye tests where they put the water, or they put dye in the water that flows toward Lake Winnebago, so they could find out where there might be access points for the goby to get through. So work is still going on, and they're very diligent about it. It's just, I think we've gotten kind of, well, they're out there. They haven't spread from beyond where we've known, except for that one instant. So we still want people to be diligent and watch for them, though.
Yeah.
And some fish are actually starting to eat them, so that helps.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. We have a lot of partnerships in the fight against invasives. I imagine those are very important. Jeannie, maybe a comment on that?
Oh, yeah. I don't know where we would be without our partnership. We really have one of the best things going in the entire country, and we're recognized for it. The Aquatic Invasive Species Partnership, or now we're starting to call it Network, because we're slowly moving into a contract system with some of the key partners for it so that we can get the coverage more widely distributed. But we have partners in around three quarters of our counties, I think. I'm not totally sure. They might work directly for a county, or they might be working for a nonprofit like Upper Sugar River Watershed Association or Golden Sands RC&D or Timberland up north. And they have a person designated or two as an AIS coordinator, and they act as the local reference person. Then those people help with everything from making sure Clean Bolts Clean Waters programs folks are trained, and they get staff out themselves. They coordinate very close with our, I'm losing track, we have six DNR regional AIS coordinators, which are DNR staff as part of the partnership, and they help a lot too. And it's just that partnership is vital.
Oh, man. Well, it's good to have you both with us today. Jeannie Scheer is an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist. And Maddie Johnson, the Wisconsin DNR's statewide aquatic plant management coordinator. Join in with your questions about these invasive, could be plant or animal, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Take a look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, Wisconsin has one of the most active aquatic invasive species programs in the country, and we've been talking about some of the efforts made to control invasives in our waterways, both plant and animal. Our guest today, Maddie Johansson, is the Wisconsin DNR statewide aquatic plant management coordinator. Jeannie Scheer is an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist. She's with the State Purple Loosestrife Biocontrol. She coordinates that with UW-Madison Division of Extension Natural Resources Institute, contracted by the Wisconsin DNR. So what would you like to know about either plant or animal aquatic invasives? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Ann emailed that she has a small pond. It flows to a larger lake. In the pond, there are large amounts of algae blooms which flow into the lake. When she picks up the algae, it's stringy looking. Is this toxic to humans to swim in the waters in the area of the pond outlets? Is it harmful to pond fish and also to the lake? Well, who wants to take that one? Maddie, do you want to take it?
Sure. Well, without a little bit more detail, it's hard to give her a really specific answer. Broadly, filamentous algae is not toxic to human beings or animals in normal quantities in a pond. It maybe feels icky between your toes when you're walking through it, but it's not going to make you sick. Pond health is a really complicated little system, and it's important to do nutrient controls on your pond that can help with your algae to some extent, making sure you have a buffer zone between your pond and your yard, making sure you don't get excessive nutrients flowing in there, and planting some beneficial aquatic plants can also help keep the oxygen levels up, and just really watch for that blue-green algae, because that's when you can maybe start to see some toxicity issues for humans.
Yeah, and that looks, that's kind of nasty looking stuff and smelly stuff, isn't it, Jeannie?
Oh, yeah, it's not pleasant and it's dangerous, you know. Yeah. I just heard somebody on, I think it was your show yesterday, was it
that
on? And talking about, someone called in, I think, and said they lost a dog, which happens. So it's not frequent. But if you even suspect it's blue-green algae, you want to stay out of the water, keep your pets out of the water. If it's in a lake, they can always call the health department to get it sampled.
Yeah. Tom in Phillips has something for us. Tom, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Great to have you with us. What's on your mind?
Well, the topic of the gobies in Lake Michigan was brought up, and it made me remember a concept that I heard that basically the gobies are able, because they have a really strong, I guess, jaw, eat the zebra mussels, and thus the lake trout eat the gobies. So it's a problem that could take care of itself. Any insights on that, if that's possible or if that's working?
Hmm. Well, Maddie, you want to take that?
I'm sorry to say that's a little outside my wheelhouse. I don't know if Jeannie, you know about
Jeannie?
That.
I am forgetting if that's specifically the case. I would be running to Google if I hadn't gotten tired of email notification and closed my laptop. but something you could look into, obviously. I'm pretty sure there are articles out there. The problem is when it comes to, they're in, you know, the Great Lakes where we have both zebra mussels and quaggas, and I don't think we want to have enough gobies out there that would actually fill up on them, because there are millions and millions of both those mussels out there. So they may make a dent, but not enough to save the day, unfortunately.
Is the zebra mussel, you know, we don't seem to hear as much about that as we used to. And is it another one of those situations where we're never going to get rid of them and it just doesn't become a news event, or what?
Maddie, have you heard anything, the latest on...
You know, I think it's like you said earlier, they're still there. they can still be problematic in some instances. They're just not getting the same amount of attention they used to.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we've found anything that would actually treat them that wouldn't hurt the native mussels and other things.
Yeah, that's the problem. Jean in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Jean.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry. And yes, I'm calling about the spiny water flea that has been found in Vilas County Lakes. Do you have any kind of update on that for me?
The spiny water flea. Who wants to take that one?
I'm not as much in the loop on those kind of things as I used to be. Maddie, have you heard anything recently?
I have not, but I was going to just pull up the contact information here for who would know that information. Some of the AIS coordinators up in the Vilas County area should be able to help you out there. Is it still Alan Wirt, Jeannie?
Well, Al is the DNR AIS coordinator. So he would be in the loop. And then Kathy Higley is the AIS coordinator for Vilas County out of the Land and County Water Department. And I'm sure she would be fully engaged in knowing what's up on that, too.
But this brings up a really good point of some of these really specific local questions. Both the DNR and Extension have a lot of really great field and regional staff who are, you know, really boots on the ground and know a lot of this information locally. And to find those folks, if it's a plant-related issue, you can go to APM Lakes Wisconsin DNR if you just Google search that, and it'll pull up all of the information for all of the regional lakes biologists as well as the AIS coordinators. And that way you can get in touch with those folks directly with some of those questions.
And AIS, of course, is a short for aquatic invasive species.
Yeah, I usually, yeah. I mean, even every day almost, if I need to quick double check on a county, I don't have tons of interaction with, I'll just go to Google and put in AIS contacts WDNR. And I get this page with the map at the top. Used to be able to click on the counties. That's not working now. But you scroll down and you can click on the different categories and find out the contact info.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for that question. Greg in Waupaca, your turn. I think we may have lost Greg. I want to go back to the...
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I appreciate your call or your follow-up on this zebra mussels. We have a cottage on Stratton Lake in central Wisconsin out of Waupaca, and they're starting to really get thick. And I just wondered if there's been any work done by the DNR or some agencies to try to eliminate them. And is there any benefit to those? I mean, they're really thick. You put your pontoon boat out or your dock or your raft and you bring it in a couple weeks later and they're thick.
And that's in the Waupaca. Which lake was that?
That's Stratton Lake.
Stratton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was actually, if I remember right, that was actually discovered during one of our AIS snapshot days that we do in conjunction with River Alliance and the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network mid-August a couple years ago. But once they're in there, you know, every one of those mussels can produce about 1 million veligers, which are their larvae, per year. And so they rapidly increase. The only positive that I see on a fairly wide scale is lakes that have had them for quite a while have there's like an ebb and flow. So kind of like anything in nature between species. So Rock Lake had them for a long time, but pretty bad in Jefferson County. And last year, my vet who's in Lake Mills told me that he took his boat launch out and didn't find a single zebra mussel on it. And he had his kids checking the rocks all summer long, and they never found any, at least not in their part of the lake. So there's hope that they'll go kind of beat themselves down, maybe eat themselves out of house and home. But, yeah, like as we said before, no way to eradicate them. But as for benefits, some people go, oh, they clean the water because they filter it, which is a bad thing. If you get too much light going into the water, you might get an overabundance of plants, and then you're calling Maddie, with a local APM person. Also, they'll eat algae, but they're eating a lot of the good algae, and they don't eat blue-green algae. It's like they know it's toxic, too.
Yeah, that's too bad. Mark emailed that anyone interested in the outdoors and our lakes in particular should read Dan Egan's book. I've interviewed Dan, talked with him personally. He's a good guy. He wrote The Death and Life of the Great Lakes, and he talks about the zebra and quagga mussel issue that we've been kind of addressing, and The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. It is I think it's a good book. Have you, either of you, familiar with it?
Oh, yeah. Read it. Recommend it. Yeah. Hope we can get him to talk at the Lakes Convention, Lakes and Rivers Convention sometime.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book. And thanks, Mark, for reminding us about it. Ray emailed to ask if anything is being done to control Chinese mystery snails in southern Bayfield County. Chinese mystery snails. That's one that I don't recall hearing before.
It's a restricted species.
Yeah, they're large and easy to step on.
So we never know how they ever get into a spot. I don't imagine.
Well, quite often the same way lots of things get in at the boat launch. And we'll mention Rock Lake again, because I was out there doing a boat survey a couple years ago, or aquatic invasive species survey. Several years I was monitoring like that for DNR, and walked into the water at the boat launch to scan for what might be new, and found banded mystery snails, which had not been found in the lake until then. So I don't know if it's true. We used to joke around, at least, that we call them mystery snails because suddenly you have thousands where you never had any. But
and
there's
quite
nothing
often
you can do with them.
And quite often they come in from one place to another, unfortunately, by boats, boaters.
Right. So it was right at the boat launch where we found them, and I don't think we found any more anywhere else on the lake that day. So they were probably just recently, some larvae must have been on a boat where the water hadn't been drained properly, or maybe stuck to the boat and it hadn't gotten a chance to dry out really well before being put into the lake, and they were able to establish. That's why we have our draining law.
That's why, yeah, and wash the outside of the boat when you get it out of the water. Part of, Maddie, I know part of what you do involves permitting. Talk about this, explain what these permits are for and how they are obtained.
Sure. So, you know, the APM program manages all aquatic plant control in waters of the state. And in Wisconsin, that's a pretty broad definition, right? If it's wet, it's a water of the state. We like to refer to the wet sock rule. And so anytime, you know, a classic lake example would be you want to get your boat around your dock and there's quite a few plants around there. That sort of activity can require a permit. Or if you're trying to manage aquatic invasive species at a lake-wide level, plants such as Eurasian water milfoil or curly-leaf pondweed. That also requires a permit. We permit chemical management, mechanical management, biological controls. The purple loosestrife beetle is an example. And so it's a pretty broad-ranging program in that regard. And you just go onto our website and submit a permit to us, and we review the merits of the permit, make sure that the management strategy that's chosen is going to be effective while also managing impacts to non-target species, primarily native plants. And our lakes biologists do a lot of that work out in the regions, and we issue permits usually within 10 to 15 days. And we're right in the thick of it right now. So a lot of treatments are happening.
A lot of treatments. So what are the penalties of if you don't get a permit?
Well, there's, I mean, the DNR uses stepped enforcement. So we like to, if a company, say, accidentally treats a pond without a permit, you know, that might just be a notice of noncompliance. You know, the wardens can get involved during these activities. You know, it's important since all of our waters are public waters that we're all accountable to each other and ensuring that we're managing aquatic plants safely and responsibly.
Yeah. Part of fighting invasives is prevention, of course. And Jeannie, maybe you can talk some more about some of the efforts you're involved in to educate folks who use our lakes and rivers.
Probably our premier activity, in fact, it can be a requirement for getting additional grants at times, is to have a Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, where we have the boat launch boat inspectors out. They're really educators. They're out there making sure people know about the invasive species rule, also referred to as NR40, that Kelly and Mark would have talked about. And it has a specific section for watercraft where you have to go ahead and inspect your boat, make sure there's no plants or animals stuck to it or hanging off it. Also the trailer, since that's partially in and out of the water, drain all the water out, not just out of the bilge, but also out of any live wells so you don't move mystery snails. Mm-hmm. And make sure that you just never move anything from the lake other than your fish, which we say don't move live fish. That simply means they're not in water. It's best to keep your fish on ice anyway, for terms of bacteria and all that. But right now, our Clean Boats, Clean Waters, our inspectors are out. Many are hired directly by lake groups, other by counties, other are by the partners, and they are wearing brand new Clean Boats, Clean Waters masks, many of them, or their own probably. We were really careful to come up with guidelines to help them be safe as well as keep the public safe so we could still conduct the education. We usually give out ice packs during the drain campaign, which this year we ended up merging with another special campaign we do called the Landing Blitz. When we give out boat towels, both have reminders about the law on it. But this year we're recommending they don't give them out. But we're still combining them, and it's being held starting this Saturday, June 28th, until July 5th. And it's part of a greater Great Lakes Landing Blitz that covers all the states and provinces on the Great Lakes that just really get the word out to boaters. So there's the Great Lake Landing Blitz is a good one to Google because you'd be able to see where all the launches are people plan to be and click on some virtual events. So it's pretty cool if you have a rainy day and you're not out in your boat.
Okay. Well, I got to ask you, here you are, the coordinator on Purple Loosestrife in the last 40 seconds or so. How's that going with purple loosestrife? I think we've had some effective controls.
Yeah, it's you know, when Brock started, he had to import the beetles from Europe. Now we have excellent wild populations of the purple loosestrife beetles. They only eat purple loosestrife. They don't hurt anything else. And we can go out and collect them and get them to people who are raising the plants. It's fun. It was a little challenging, of course, this year because some of the things that go on with volunteer groups couldn't. But individuals and households and specific work groups were still able to carry on. So they're really worried it could take off.
Well, on that note, we're out of time. Jeannie and Maddie, thank you both so much for being with us. They really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeannie Shearer is Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist with the UW-Madison Division of Extension Natural Resources Institute, contracted by the WDNR. Maddie Johansson is the Wisconsin DNR Statewide Aquatic Plant Management Coordinator. Great to have both of them with us to talk about a very important problem or important issue for the state. Well, tomorrow, Daniel Golden from Boswick Books will be here to give us his recommendations for good summer reads. So good for him to come by. And good for you to be here. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.